This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. If you are planning to get a flu shot this season, health officials are hoping you'll think twice. If you're over 65, have a chronic health problem, pregnant, or have a child or two, then you should get the vaccine. Otherwise, hold back. That's because the amount of flu vaccine available this winter has been cut in half. Yesterday, Chiron Corporation, one of only two American companies that makes the flu vaccine, announced that it won't be able to ship the 48 million doses of the vaccine it planned to deliver to clinics and doctors' offices in the United States. The problem? A British regulatory agency shut down Chiron's plant in Liverpool, where the company makes the vaccine, citing, quote, a problem with the manufacturing process. We'll try to find out what that means this hour. We'll also be taking your calls and answering questions you have about the flu vaccine. Who's at risk, who isn't, and how big a problem this really is. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us from member station WXXI in Rochester, New York, is Dr. John Traynor, professor of medicine in the Infectious Diseases Unit at the University of Rochester. He's also a member of the Centers for Disease Control Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices. Welcome, Dr. Traynor.
Hi, Joe. Thanks.
So why don't we start just by saying how big a deal is this? I mean, there still are 50 million or so vaccine doses expected to be delivered from, I guess it's Aventis and MedImmune, the other two companies. How much of a problem are we really facing here?
Well, last year we used a little bit more than 80 million doses, and the hope had been that we would have something on the order of 100 million doses this year. So this does represent a significantly smaller supply than we were really looking forward to. Now, in saying that, I think we probably still have enough vaccine to cover most of the people who are at the highest risk of flu-related complications.
Now, I kind of breezed through the list at the start of the show, but why don't you go through it more carefully and say who the CDC is now recommending should get a vaccine from the doses that are available?
Well, the recommendations for who should get the vaccine haven't changed a lot with these new problems that we've had. The vaccine is really targeted for the kinds of people who are recognized to have a higher risk of complications if they develop the flu. And this includes anyone over the age of 65, adults and children who have chronic medical conditions mostly involving the heart or the lungs. So these would be people who have chronic heart disease or heart failure or who've had a heart attack, or people who have chronic lung disease such as asthma or chronic bronchitis, or other individuals who have those kinds of risk problems that make the flu more severe.
I see.
Then we're also interested in vaccinating women who are going to be pregnant during the flu season, because we know that women who are pregnant have a much higher rate of hospitalization when they have flu, and we want to try and prevent that. We've also recognized that children who are between the ages of 6 and 23 months have a very high risk of hospitalization if they get the flu, because they're very young. They haven't had flu before, so they're very susceptible. And when they do have the flu, they tend to have very high fever and be more likely to be brought to medical attention and come into the hospital. And so that's a new group for which we're recommending vaccination. And then another important group are individuals who work in the healthcare system and have direct patient care responsibilities that would bring them in contact with other people who have high risk conditions.
So does that mean that people who are, you know, middle-aged or young adults, healthy, shouldn't worry and should really leave the vaccine to people who need it more?
Yes, that's what we're recommending this year, is that healthy persons below the age of 65 who have no chronic medical conditions should forego vaccine or defer it until we've had a chance to vaccinate people at higher risk.
Now, maybe we should remind people, I mean, most of us, I think, still think of flu as sort of an annoyance and possibly, you know, an unpleasantness, but not life-threatening. But it can be for certain groups, isn't that right?
That's right. As a matter of fact, influenza is responsible for something on the order of 30 to 40,000 deaths every year in the United States. But the vast majority of those serious illnesses, hospitalizations, and death take place in people who have recognized risk factors such as advanced age or chronic medical conditions.
Now, you said that there were 80 million vaccinations given out last year, and I've sort of gotten the impression that they're trying to increase the number of people vaccinated every year, if only to prevent work loss and perhaps even as a public health measure to get more people vaccinated and less chance of passing the flu around. Is this going to hurt those efforts now that, you know, this vaccine isn't going to be available?
Well, you're absolutely right that the effort has been to try and expand the numbers of people who are vaccinated every year. And this kind of setback is frustrating, but I think ultimately we will be successful.
Okay. Now, most people think about the flu as a shot, but there is an alternative, is there not?
That's correct. Recently, a new type of flu vaccine was licensed, which is actually given by nasal spray. And it's fundamentally a different type of vaccine because instead of being a killed vaccine or an inactivated vaccine, the new vaccine is a live viral vaccine that undergoes limited replication in the nose, enough to induce an immune response, but not enough to cause symptoms.
So is this a vaccine you can give to children, or do they have to take the older one because it's safer?
Well, there's limited information about the safety of the live vaccine in children under the age of 5. So for right now, that live vaccine, which is called FluMist, is only licensed for healthy people between the ages of 5 and 49.
Okay. Well, we'd like to hear what your questions are about flu vaccine. Our number is 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. And let's take a call from Kathy in the Tri-City area of Washington. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. By the way, I think your comments and exchange are an excellent coverage of the topic. I'm an RN, and I've been giving the flu shot for years, and I've even had it a couple of times in various work locations. But I'm actually I'm interested in the fact that there's only half the volume of vaccine available, because perhaps now we can have an opportunity to see if it actually affects the numbers of occurrences of the flu in the country this year. And my interest in it is that I don't really think the flu vaccine prevents the flu. I mean, it may in the three strains that it's addressing, but I think people feel that it's an all cure for every kind of flu, which is absolutely not the case. And so I'm just curious to see what the outcome will be. And thank you for your comments.
Okay, Kathy, thanks for that call. Dr. Trainor, is it going to be possible to answer Kathy's question? Will data be collected for this year to say how many cases of flu this year versus last? And will comparisons be able to be made?
Well, absolutely. The Public Health Service maintains very careful track of hospitalizations and deaths due to influenza every year, and I have no doubt that we will be able to measure whether or not there's an effect of this shortage. Now, I will say that we don't use the flu vaccine to actually prevent flu infection, although it does do that. The main reason we use flu vaccine is to prevent flu complications, and there is no question that the vaccine is effective in that regard. Now, Kathy, I would have to remind you that even though there is a shortage, you yourself should still be getting vaccinated every year because you are a person who has direct patient care contact and can conceivably transmit flu to those who are at high risk.
I want to pursue one other thing that Kathy mentioned, and that was she mentioned that there were three strains. Maybe you can explain to people what the flu vaccine is, and actually it might be interesting to know why you have to get revaccinated every year.
Well, those are great questions, and we're going to have to divert a little bit into flu virology. I don't want to bore everybody with a lecture, but just when we talk about influenza, we're talking about a disease that caused by a group of viruses that you could call the influenza viruses. And there are two main types of influenza virus that cause significant disease in humans, and those are the influenza A viruses and the influenza B viruses. Now, the influenza A viruses are further subdivided on the basis of two very important proteins that are present on the outside of the virus called the hemagglutinin, which is sometimes referred to as the H, and the neuraminidase, which is referred to as the N. And it turns out that the influenza A viruses that have infected or that currently infect humans can be subdivided on the basis of the H and the N into the influenza A H3N2 subtype and the influenza A H1N1 subtype. Now, every year there's a risk that any one of those three kinds of influenza virus, the H1N1, the H3N2, or the B, might cause disease because they're all isolated in different parts of the world over the course of the year. So to provide optimal protection, the vaccine is actually formulated with one representative of an H3N2 virus, one representative of an H1N1 virus, and one representative of a B virus, and that's why it's called a trivalent vaccine.
Because three strains. Okay, I always wondered.
Because it has three strains.
Got it.
And that's true for both the inactivated vaccine, or the flu shot, as well as the nasal flu mist vaccine. They both contain the same three strains of influenza virus.
Okay. I just want to say, though, that I think at this point you've gotten several million people ready for their roles as advisors on the Committee for Immunization Practices with that explanation, because you brought us up to speed very nicely.
Okay.
The other part of the question, yes. Why multiple shots?
Why every year? Influenza is a very tricky virus, and it has a very high mutation rate, which means that its genetic makeup is constantly changing. And under the selective pressure of previous immunity, influenza viruses tend to mutate to come up with new varieties of hemagglutinin that can escape from the antibody that people might have from a prior infection. And that's the reason why influenza viruses can continue to cause epidemics every single year. These changes, which occur in the hemagglutinin and the neuraminidase of both influenza A and influenza B viruses, tend to be relatively minor, but enough so that even though you had the flu last year, if the virus has mutated a little bit, you can still get infected the next year. And that's the reason why the vaccine has to be reformulated every season, so that we match the vaccine with whatever strains of influenza are predicted to occur in the coming flu season.
And as I get it, that decision about, you know, the predicted strains is made, you know, several months ago, so the companies have to work well in advance, but they need the time to actually manufacture the vaccine.
Absolutely. It is one of the unique things about influenza vaccine, different from almost any other type of vaccine that we use today, that poses such a significant challenge to having something ready on time every single year. It is actually quite a challenging vaccine to make.
And is there any indication yet of what kind of flu season we're facing? I mean, some years it's bad, some years not so bad.
Right. Well, you put on your crystal ball and you look in there. Estimating what's going to happen from year to year, I think it's more of an art than a science, and it's very difficult to know. As you know, last year we had a relatively severe influenza epidemic here in the United States. We have not seen a significant change in the H3 virus, which is typically the one that causes the most severe changes. And that, plus the fact that there was a lot of exposure last year, might lead you to conclude that this year's flu epidemic will not be as severe.
Well, here's hoping anyway. We're talking about the shortage of flu vaccine, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. You can send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. We're talking about the shortage of flu vaccine this year. Yesterday, one of the two American companies that makes the vaccine announced it won't be able to deliver any of the tens of millions of doses health officials were counting on. Call us with your questions, any questions you might have about how this might affect you and your family. The number is 800-989-TALK. The email is totn@npr.org. And this event about the vaccines being unfortunately discarded or no longer shipped raises some interesting questions about the vaccine industry. Why are there only two suppliers? How is the industry related? Who controls the supply? Joining us now to talk about these issues is Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health. Thanks for speaking with us today.
It's good to be here.
So, Dr. Fauci, there's only two suppliers. It seems like we're talking about 100 million doses of flu vaccine. That's a lot for just two suppliers to produce. And how did we get into a situation where we're only having two to depend on?
Well, I think it's very emblematic of the whole vaccine field in general. It is very, very difficult to get incentives for pharmaceutical companies to get involved with the development and the production of vaccines for a number of reasons. First of all, the profit margin is really not very good. If they have the option of making a vaccine versus developing a blockbuster drug that people would buy at a high price and use for the rest of their lives, rather than a relatively inexpensive product like a vaccine, which people would use one or two or three times at the most. The other thing is that it's very, very risky. When you're dealing with synthetic compounds of making drugs, you have much more control over some of the possibilities and the vicissitudes that it can go wrong. Whereas when you're dealing with a biologic like a virus vaccine, then you have a very, very high risk of anything going wrong, failures such as we've seen represented by what happened with Chiron with the influenza. So it isn't a question of our not wanting there to be more companies to deal with, but we, in many respects, find ourselves lucky that we even have two companies that are interested. We have a third one, but they're providing about 2 million doses as opposed to the 100 million doses that would generally equally divided between Aventis, Pasteur, and Chiron. So it's a tough situation that we've been aware of for years, and it really goes well beyond influenza. It's with virtually all vaccines.
You mentioned the problems Chiron is having. Do we know anything about what happened, and can you give us a sense of what kinds of things can happen?
Well, for example, what happened is about several weeks ago, we were alerted voluntarily by Chiron that they were having some contamination problems with some of the lots, so anywhere around 2 to 4 million of the doses of the original 50-plus doses that they were supposed to supply to the federal government. But they checked it out, and it seemed to be confined to just those doses. But as part of the process of further checking it out, the British regulatory authorities, who are responsible for the regulation of their vaccine-producing plant in Liverpool, England, did an inspection of the plant and found some difficulties there, the nature of which are still unclear to us here, and was trying to find out exactly what it is, but some apparent systemic problems there at the production facility, which prompted the British regulatory authorities to decide to suspend temporarily for 3 months the production and shipping of this vaccine, which for us, coming at the 11th hour as it did, is really rather an abrupt change for us, an abrupt shock, actually, that all of a sudden we went from 100 million doses that we were expecting to now half of that, which is obviously we're going to have to readjust our planning and our prioritizations.
Right. And did the British regulatory agency give any specific reasons, or did they cite this contamination or say what it was?
At this point in time, they have not. They may have subsequent. We were on the phone with them yesterday afternoon, Secretary Thompson and I and Julie Gerberding and Jesse Goodman from the FDA, and we did not get a clear picture of exactly what the problem was, only that it was significant enough that it prompted them to make this move. We're trying to get our FDA people in closer contact and interchange with the British authorities to see if we could sort this out exactly what it was that prompted this.
Okay. Well, we have some callers who have some questions to ask as well. So why don't I take one of those calls? Victoria in Alexandria, Virginia. Victoria, welcome to the program.
Hello. I'm wondering, why don't we have more companies in the United States? Why don't we want to depend upon a foreign country like England? Why don't we have it right in the United States? And why doesn't the government give a tax break or an incentive for the companies to make and store the vaccines here? We need more companies here in the U.S. And I cannot take that myth because it's dangerous. It's live. I'm 64. So I want more companies here.
Okay. Victoria, thanks for that. What is the government doing, or can the government do, or is this the free market and we have to live with it?
Exactly. I agree with the caller that we do need more companies here in the United States. We do have the other company, Aventis Pasteur, which is manufacturing out of Edgewater, Pennsylvania. We'd love to have more companies. The reasons we don't have it is precisely the reasons that I gave just a moment ago, Joe, is that the incentives for companies to get involved are, in fact, marginal. And if they had a choice, they would probably go do make another a product, such as a drug, that they can get a high profit margin. The caller did make a good point. We need to develop incentives. We need to work closely with the companies about providing incentives, whatever they may be. They could be guaranteed purchases, they could be guaranteed prices, they could be tax breaks, whatever it is. We need to embrace them and get them involved more, because if left to their own devices, very few of them would want to get involved in vaccine development.
I have an email from one of our listeners, Elizabeth in Baltimore, who writes, "My company is giving flu shots to employees on Monday. Most of us are healthy, not at-risk adults, but we're still receiving them even though there is a shortage. If there is such a shortage, why are there not any limits on who actually gets them? If many companies get this done early, many of the at-risk Americans are not going to receive them regardless of needs, and there are no laws in place that provide the needy to receive these shots before healthy adults, or is it just first come, first serve?" I mean, you're asking people, Dr. Fauci, the government is asking people to hold back voluntarily, right?
Right. They're asking them to hold back voluntarily. That's the announcement that was made and associated with the interim guidelines that came from the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices that advises the CDC. In fact, it isn't mandatory. We're relying on the goodwill of people to realize that we do have a problem situation here, where we need to get the vaccine to the people who are at the highest risks, the ones that were listed, the children, the elderly, and the people with chronic illnesses. This hopefully will be affected, and people will comply with that. But at this point in time, there's no mandatory. It's much easier for that policy to be executed when people go to their physician's office or their health care provider, because a physician would know that someone is an otherwise healthy person and would suggest to them that they forestall the request for a vaccine. But when you go to a Walmart or a Giant to get it, it's very difficult for somebody behind the counter to make the determination that this person isn't a 45-year-old person who might have heart disease or diabetes or a chronic illness that would put them on the list of a high priority. So that's one of the problems with making the vaccine distributed through those venues. The good news is that it makes it easier for someone to get a vaccine. The bad news is, under these types of special circumstances, it's very difficult to control who gets the vaccine.
True. Dr. Fauci, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
You're quite welcome.
That was Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institute of Health, Institutes of Health. He spoke to us from his office in Bethesda, Maryland. Still with me from WXXI in Rochester, New York, is Dr. John Traynor. He's a professor of medicine in the Infectious Diseases Unit at the University of Rochester, and a member of the CDC Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices, which is the group that I guess advises CDC on what to tell all of us to be doing. Dr. Traynor, I have a bunch of specific questions here about the flu vaccine. Can I just run through some of those with you?
Sure.
Okay, so the first
you
one...
You want to do them one at a time?
I'll do them one at a time, and they've come in from email. First one comes from Nancy Short. And she says, or I hope that's how I pronounced it, Nancy, "Hi, I'll be traveling to Indonesia and had hoped to get a flu vaccine before I went. Does international travel make you a high-risk person?"
No, it doesn't, unless you have already some other medical condition. But simply traveling to another country would not be in itself a reason to be vaccinated under the current set of circumstances.
Okay, and here's another one, also email from John Comley in Berkeley, who says, "I am getting chemotherapy for cancer. I am told this makes me more vulnerable for infections. Should I seek the flu vaccine?"
Yeah, absolutely. Chemotherapy would be on the list of things that increase your risk of complications, and people who have cancer or who are getting chemotherapy or radiation therapy should receive their flu vaccine as per usual.
Okay, and here's another one from Marie in Rockville, Maryland. I am an RN, and in the past we have recommended that family members of those who are indicated to receive the flu vaccine also get immunized. I believe the thinking is that even if you're immunized, you can still get the flu if you're constantly bombarded by the virus. Is that true? And I would be interested in your answer regarding how to counsel these families given the shortage of vaccines.
Well, it is true. And our usual recommendation would be that family members of a high-risk individual should also be vaccinated. This is one of the things that's going to be different this year. We're going to be relying on the vaccine that you give to the high-risk person to prevent influenza, and we are going to be asking family members of that high-risk person not to receive vaccine unless they themselves also have high-risk conditions. The one exception to this would be family members of children less than 6 months of age. We know that those very youngest infants are at very high risk, but the vaccine is not licensed, and so they can't be vaccinated. And to protect those very young children, we do recommend that the family contacts of young infants receive the vaccine this year.
I see. So what is the age, bottom age for children getting the vaccine?
6 months.
The
inactivated vaccine is licensed down to age 6 months.
Huh. Interesting. Okay, here's a call from Paul. An email from Paul in Bethesda who says, my daughter is in a high-risk category. She has asthma, but she also, like many other asthma sufferers, has allergies to eggs, among other substances. I understand that the flu vaccines are made on the basis of albumin from eggs, and this has prevented her from getting the vaccine in the past. Is the mist an alternative, or what would you recommend? And should healthy family members get vaccinated? I guess we more or less talked about that last point. But what about the egg question?
Well, the egg question is an interesting one. And the current recommendation is that the vaccine not be used in people who have a severe allergy, such as anaphylaxis to hen's eggs. So it really depends a little bit on the severity of the underlying allergy. Now, if, in fact, this girl who has asthma could absolutely not be vaccinated because of a contraindication, that might be another scenario where the family should be vaccinated, even though we wouldn't normally do that, because the high-risk person in this particular case can't be vaccinated. And so some of these things are going to have to be decided on a case-by-case basis.
We're talking with Dr. John Trainer. He's a professor of medicine in the Infectious Diseases Unit at the University of Rochester and a member of the CDC Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices. We're talking about the fact that the U.S. suddenly finds itself with about half of the 100 million flu vaccine shots it was expecting to have because of some manufacturing problems that the company Chiron ran into at its plant in Liverpool, England. We'd like to hear from you. Our number is 800-989-TALK, or you can send us an email to totn@npr.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take another one of your calls and go to Forrest in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Forrest, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I'm an EMT here in New Jersey. I'm a EMT instructor. I really do very limited EMT work, mostly instruction. I'm 56 years old and of fairly good health. I was going to get a flu shot, and now I don't know what to do.
Any advice for Forrest?
You're right in that sort of borderline group, so it really depends on whether you do or don't have direct patient care contact. If you intend to be working as an EMT, where you might be taking persons who are having a heart attack or asthma episode to the hospital in the ambulance and perhaps ministering them on the way, you would definitely need to have a flu shot. Only occasionally. So how much is occasionally?
Maybe once or twice a month.
I would probably say yes, you should have a flu shot.
Okay.
But it is kind of a borderline call there.
Right. I didn't want to take it away from somebody who really should have it, but then if I should have it, I did want to get it.
Okay. Forrest, thanks for that that call. It's going to be tough for people to decide, and I think it's actually asking a lot of people to sort of say, I mean, I know even already a lot of my colleagues here at NPR is thinking, I don't want to get sick. I mean, that's a pain in the neck. Maybe I should get vaccinated, you know, now while the shots are still around.
Well, one thing I would remind people is that there are effective treatments available for individuals who do develop influenza. Don't forget that there are at least four different drugs which can be used to decrease the severity of influenza symptoms in people who have the flu, and which have been shown to also reduce the risk of subsequent complications. So that if you haven't been vaccinated and you do develop flu, there are some options.
Well, maybe this is a good time to get you to remind people about the difference between the symptoms of flu and the symptoms of a cold or some other infection that isn't the flu.
Well, you know, those symptoms can overlap, and so it can be sometimes difficult to distinguish them. But the characteristics really of flu are the presence of fever, those systemic symptoms of muscle aches, and cough. Those seem to be the characteristics that really divide flu from the other common respiratory illnesses. Rhinoviruses or other viruses that cause a common cold typically in adults are not associated with fever and usually don't cause much cough, although they do have a lot of sore throat and stuffy nose. So there's a little bit of a differentiation there based on how much of the illness is systemic and febrile and how much is more upper respiratory and runny nose.
Okay, we have time for one more quick call. Fahim in Kansas City, Missouri, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I just have a quick question. You were talking earlier about what happened at the manufacturing plant, but I would like to know how safe is the drug that we got from that plant and other various plants that we have already received.
Okay, Fahim, thanks for that. How safe is what we have on hand, Dr. Trainer?
Well, the issue that came up at the manufacturing plant was specific to the making of that particular year's flu vaccine. There's no indication that this issue extends to other products made by Chiron. So I think that for those products, you can consider them to be safe.
And the Pasteur Aventis, as far as we know, that's perfectly safe, that vaccine.
Absolutely. And I will say that the reason why this problem was discovered was because of the very extensive testing that's done to any pharmaceutical product before it's actually released for use. And those safeguards obviously worked to prevent the release of the vaccine before it was ever administered to people, and that's a good thing.
Okay, that's all the time we have for this segment. Thanks very much for speaking with us this afternoon, Dr. Trainer.
Okay.
Dr. John Trainer is a professor of medicine in the Infectious Diseases Unit at the University of Rochester and a member of the CDC Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices. He joined us from member station WXXI in Rochester, New York. When we come back from a short break, Mo Rocca joins us with a revealing look at who really controls the White House. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.